You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare Alley, the spooky little side street podcast in the regular Nightmare on Film Street feed. I'm John.
I'm Kim.
And joining us today are Chris and Melissa LaMartina, co-producers of Out There, the Halloween megatape. Chris is also the writer-director of the film, and Melissa stars in it as Ivy Sparks, the host of a fake 90s TV show. Out There, Halloween Megatape is a sort of unofficial sequel to WNUF. It's really kind of been billed for a while now, until it came out as WNUF2, and it is very much its own thing.
A spiritual brother.
Yes, but if you were a fan of the WNUF Halloween special that came out a few years ago, you are gonna absolutely love this spiritual sequel, this 90s spiritual sequel.
Yeah, if you were unfamiliar with WNUF, you definitely have to seek it out. It's a really fun Halloween night romp, a live, quote-unquote, broadcast of a Halloween special gone wrong. It's got everything you love from retro television, newscasters being goofy and weird, commercials upon commercials upon commercials, and some spooky hijinks. If you watched and fell in love with the BBC's Ghost Watch, which has had a modern resurgence now that people in Britain aren't allowed to watch it again, you're really going to love everything that the LaMartinas are doing, because the Out There Halloween Megatape is just more of that faux realism goodness. It's hard to call it found footage. It's more like collage filmmaking.
But it also comes from the perspective of you purchasing it at a bootleg video store. And oddly enough, like, that is sort of woven through the story of the movie. But also, like, if you were one of the people that pre-ordered it or supported it on its crowdfunding campaign, it came with a booklet of bootleg tapes that don't exist, including the Out There Halloween Mega Tape. I've got it in front of me. It's Trader Tony's Tape Dungeon.
I mean, even if you just buy the movie now, you can get a full commentary from the bootlegger Trader Tony.
Oh, it's absolutely insane. Yeah.
But even if you just want to watch it as a regular movie, it's just a story in two parts.
Yes, story in two parts set during the 90s with commercials that are so close to reality that you'd think they're real.
They are so good at towing the line between being funny and nostalgic and kind of making fun of what they were and just being what they were.
Yeah. These are actually kind of hard movies to talk about because they are their own unique little pieces of filmmaking. And I love what Chris and Melissa have done with the Out There Halloween Megatape. It is a fucking crowd pleaser from start to finish. And it is just a oddball piece of horror genre sci-fi cinema.
But if you're a fan of found footage movies and everything that's involved in independent filmmaking, you're really going to love this conversation. So stay tuned for our chat with Chris and Melissa LaMartina on Out There, the Halloween Megatape, a.k.a. WNUF2.
The following presentation contains controversial theories that may not be suitable for all audiences. The views and opinions expressed in this program are not the only possible interpretations. Viewer discretion is advised.
Chris, Melissa, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. We're so excited to talk to you about... What's the official title of this? Is it just Out There Halloween Megatape, or is it actually WNUF2 Out There Halloween Megatape?
So I think calling it WNUF2 leading up to the actual release was to keep the title a secret.
Okay.
Because when we shipped people their copies, we wanted them to get these weird packages from Trader Tony's Tape Dungeon, not knowing what it was. So the official title is Out There Halloween Megatape. But for marketing purposes and to keep it hush-hush, WNUF2.
Well, and also because no one would understand what we were talking about. Like, the Out There Halloween Megatape, cool.
Yeah, I think I watched that on YouTube.
Yeah.
My dad, and I shouldn't say this, he listens to the podcast. My My dad is like that, where I'll mention the most obscure movie and be like, oh yeah, no, I think I've seen that every single time. You know what I should do, actually, is go through this Trader Tony's tape dungeon catalog.
You should just start quizzing him.
Yeah. I mean, it's all over now. He's going to listen to the show.
Right.
He's like, oh,
well,
right, my son's
a jerk. You have a limited amount of time to trick your dad.
Well, dude, that's what's so funny. Years ago, we were at, I don't know if we were at Blobfest or somewhere, but somebody walks up to our table and they're like, WNUF Halloween special. I remember seeing this as a kid.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, the fuck you did?
I mean, it was a 5-year-old, to be fair.
Yeah.
Oh. A 5-year-old remembered watching this in the 80s. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
So for anybody who's familiar with WNUF, I think they kind of know what they're in for. But could you maybe explain to people who are just hearing about this for the first time the mad brilliance that these projects are?
I'll humbly say it's interesting. So if you don't, the first one is basically like if you tape TV, local TV in the 1980s, right? So you're like a newscaster is doing a live broadcast from the town's haunted house. And takes place in 1987. It's like you taped it off TV with fake commercial breaks every 5 minutes, right? And some people hate that because they don't understand that commercials were so much a part of us growing up watching TV. The sequel, the conceit with Out There Halloween Megatape is you've got a tape from a mail order movie catalog, right? So I would say I started collecting tapes probably before I was 10 years old, but I started getting mail order catalogs when I was around like 10 to 13 because some of the deep cuts horror-wise you couldn't get at like your local video store. So if I wanted like an uncut version of Dead Alive or if I wanted like Sam Raimi's short films, I had to get them from these really weird, pretty seedy mail order catalogs that luckily my mom did not care about letting me get. And so the conceit with the Out There Halloween Megatape is you're getting a catalog of fake or of real movies, quote unquote, from Trader Tony's Tape Dungeon, which is a mail order catalog based somewhere in the mid-Atlantic, I guess New Jersey, based off his accent. and it's like, you know, this is a compilation of a TV talk show host show and then a small network's Halloween night presentation this time. And it all takes place in 1994 and 1996.
The Trader Tony thing is so, like, I think it makes it very hard to try and explain to people what the movie is, right? Because, like, where do I start? Do I explain the movie? Do I explain Trader Tony? Okay, so there's back in the 90s, there were catalogs. Like, you kind of have to, like, deliver people, like, a history
of the 90s.
What
year were you born? Start with that.
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty crazy. I mean, like, there's collecting now. I mean, there's obviously this huge resurgence of VHS culture, but, like, back when you were like a young horror fan in the 90s or even before that, it was like really hard to find some of this stuff. I mean, like, that's why the whole shtick with you. And I should clarify, the Trader Tony's Tape Dungeon catalog is we gave it to a certain level of crowdsource backers, but then also you could only get it with the VHS bundle. And then occasionally I'll slip some copies to people with a wink. But basically this catalog is 350 fake movies. And it's hard to believe that that's how some people, that's the only way you could see like uncut versions or director's cuts for a long time before, you know, before DVD and Blu-ray really emphasized special features.
Well, one movie in it is real because WNUF is in there too, isn't it?
Oh, that's true. Yeah, WNF and Out There
so
are. And then there's a couple other ones I've been tempted to make that are in the catalog, but I don't know. I only have so much life in me.
Well, yeah, like we actually needed the host's, like for our notes here before the call, we needed the host's name for Out There, and I just assumed that it'd be in the catalog, and bam, it was there. So it's also a cheat sheet for the movie if you're doing an interview with the filmmakers.
That's like something that's like so important too, that world building, right? So there's a lot of directors and weird characters and like stars from these movies that sort of go throughout the zine, but yeah.
We were actually, before this interview, we were watching Out There with your director's commentary. And evidence of that is that the Dracula dentist is a character,
yeah,
right?
Well, Werner Glass is the character name. It's our buddy Mike Zicardi, who plays him, and then also Judge Grimm in the Blood Gavel promo. But we tried to make, and like Werner Glass is in the tape trading catalog, so he literally like threads through in a bunch of like I made some joke about how he plays a lactating drill sergeant in a Vietnam era comedy, like all this weird shit that would never, you know, like. We're pretty dedicated to the world building stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you'll find Reed Richmond throughout the catalog listed there. Stuff that's like mentioned in the movies in there, like Bikini Mortuary, which Reed Richmond is in, right?
I think he is. I think he plays a doctor or something. And if he isn't now, he is, because we just made it part of the canon.
Do you guys just continually riff like up new movies that could get put in the catalog? Like, do you have a document that you're continually updating?
Okay, the catalog part two.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I mean, I don't know if Melissa wants to talk about the process, but I mean, like, I knew I wanted to do this early on with the movie, right? And mostly because like it was fun, but ultimately like the idea of like, you know, with the original WNUF, it's like, okay, how are you getting this tape? Theoretically, you're watching the tape that came from Harvest, right? Because there's like weird shit at the end of the movie. But with this one, I was like, okay, in the 90s to me, what was the vessel? How would I actually get something of these two tapes and make sense that it's stitched together? But the process of writing the catalog.
Oh yeah, like during the pandemic when no one had anything else to do, you know, we'd like pour glasses of whiskey and sit on the sofa and just be like, okay, what's a really good title for a movie about horny nuns? How about one that's like an orphan who learns kung fu? You know, just like weird prompts, and like would list all these movies. And then Chris gets up really early, so he'd get up at like 4:30 or 5. Oof. And by the time I got up a couple hours later, he'd be like, okay, I wrote, you know, 20 descriptions for these like dumb titles that we came up with last night.
Yeah, so like a lot of them really would start either with a title or with a really, really simple log line. And then obviously some of it's like influenced by like, okay, like, oh, let's make something that's like, I mean, the thing I bring up all the time is, I don't know if you guys have ever seen, this is non-horror, but a lot of the stuff in the catalog is non-horror. I don't know if you've ever seen Winnebago Man. It was like this weird tape of a guy, like losing his shit because he can't like deliver lines for this Winnebago infomercial.
Yeah.
So like there were things that were like improvised, like, okay, I'll come up with something like Angry Chef about a guy who's doing a cooking show and losing his fucking mind. You know, so things like that were influenced by some things that really were on these tape trading catalogs. Like, I think there was one, I'm just like, I remember this one thing I never ordered from. So the one I would always order from was called Catalog of Carnage. And they had a one thing in there that was called Farting Preacher. It was like a short. But I never ordered it. And I was like, what the fuck is that short about? So I think I wrote one in the catalog called Stoned like Preacher or something. Well, I think what they ended up doing, I could be wrong, it's probably on YouTube now, I could probably look it up right now, but I think they just added fart sound effects to like a Jerry Falwell sermon.
Order that as a tape, because now it's like you could go on YouTube, or like, remember when Vine was a thing and you could probably find like a 20-minute compilation of fart sounds like set to sermons? But man, kids don't understand, you had to order that shit
and you'd be ripped off a lot of times, you know. It's like, I mean, that's like the same thing when you'd like
expectations though
for farting preacher. I want the apocalypse now of flatulent clergy.
5 hours of farting. I want a 3-tape set.
I don't want the clickbait version. I want the hours.
Yeah, I want the redux. Yeah.
Yes. I want the director's cut.
That's amazing. You know, it's funny. There's the Kim and I, there's a book that we did not get from a thrift shop one time, and it has haunted us for years. It's called Who Farted?
It's called Look Who Farted.
Look Who Farted. And it's just still frames from like old black and white movies where characters are looking at each other and like maybe one of them is looking a little suspicious or embarrassed. And that's it. And that's all it is.
Book. It's like a coffee table book. And like, I think the queen is in it. Like, it was,
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we should have got it. It's like, I can't find it anywhere. I can't find it on eBay. But
hey, wow. Christmas is coming. You never know what might arrive in the mail.
Oh, the search continues. Yeah.
We love making dreams come true. Yeah.
I gotta say though, if I could make a pitch like of anything in this book that you should absolutely make, it's the Best of Ivy Sparks compilation tape. Because I'm sure you've got 100 great ideas for Ivy Sparks, but the idea that she tells a KKK member to be nice sounds way too fun to pass up.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I actually, oh my God, we'd have to rebuild that whole set.
Oh my God,
because
right.
we had our friend Sierra built that set at a local Baltimore Rock Opera Society that Melissa was really involved with for a long time. Yeah, but you know, you brought it.
Yeah, no, I mean, originally we were supposed to shoot all of the Ivy stuff in one day and, you know, just like shoot all the audience and flip around and shoot all the stage stuff. And we were supposed to shoot that April of 2020. So clearly that didn't happen. So ended up like, as we were able to move toward shooting with multiple people again, we ended up doing that in two separate locations, which I think worked out for the best.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You don't want anybody to get fatigued, you know, and dealing with a lot of people. Actually, like our audience members were amazing. Like,
yeah,
typically you can be a little bit worried about that situation of having that many people who are mostly just sitting and waiting for the next thing that they're told to do. Losing interest or kind of, you know, getting off task or whatever. But man,
they were excited.
They were so on board with everything and were so enthusiastic and just like nailed it.
Well, it's funny too, because I feel like the idea of it was everyone had already been like, it was right when people were getting vaccinated again. Everyone was like across the board, most people in Maryland were all vaccinated at that point. And, or that we're going to get vaccinated, rather, I should say. But they were all dressed up. So like for the context of people not listening, haven't seen the movie, the first half hour is a Halloween episode of a 90s tabloid talk show. And I won't go too much more into detail about that. But everyone had to show up in costume. And whoever didn't come in costume, we had a whole like assembly line of shit that they could grab from our like holding area. And I mean, just looking up this audience of people dressed as like clowns and like ninjas and like all these like it was such a weird experience because that was probably the most people had ever been with other folks since the whole pandemic. Yeah. So people were just stoked.
But then we ended up, you know, looking for the location for the actual stage stuff.
Yeah.
And we had a set designer friend of ours who designed a beautiful set when I had directed a production of Frankenstein a few years ago.
Oh, like, wow.
She can make anything and make it cheap.
She's so talented.
Incredible. If anybody is in Baltimore and needs a set designer, Sierra Ho is amazing. But she built this on the practice stage of the Baltimore Rock Opera Society's new home. And we were able to just take over that space for a couple weeks while she built. And then we did that side of everything. And like, it's one of those things that's just testament to like how supportive the arts community of Baltimore is. Like we talk about that all the time, that there are things that we do that we could not do anywhere else because like the community is always just so stoked to be involved and to like participate in stuff like that. But I also wanted to give a side note because you were talking about people being in costume for the audience. One of our friends showed up a full week early in costume for the location. And it was at this theater in this small town that's like 45 minutes north of us. And she's like knocking on the door.
And she's dressed up as a vampire.
Of course. Oh, a whole week early. It was so cute.
Like holding a fucking orange pumpkin. Yeah. Like being like,
oh, that's amazing. Yeah. Definitely made it into a Facebook post, right? Just like, oh yeah, the world's still weird. Oh, that's so great.
It would be great if it was like a church you guys were filming at.
Right. Yeah. Oh man, that's the other thing, man. We've had situations like that with years past. So the movie that Melissa and I met making was a film called Call Girl of Cthulhu, and we actually got kicked out of. We were supposed to. This is a crazy story. We were supposed to film all these cult scenes at this now closed church, and somebody on crew left the sign for the cult church that we only had, like, it was only gonna be up for an exterior shot. They left the sign on the church. They were like, oh, we'll just get it in the morning. Someone from the church saw that, called them, and kicked us out of the location.
Oh, no.
So, like, yeah, that's a crazy story involving churches.
That's wild. I love the Ivy Sparks of it all. Like, that was a huge left turn that I wasn't like, having seen the original having seen WNUF, I wasn't expecting a 90s talk show at the beginning of Out There.
I was so stoked because even in the intro I was like, oh, we're not gonna get the whole show. And when we did with the coming up, we're gonna talk to a real vampire and we're gonna talk to, I was like, I really hope we're gonna watch this show. And then we did, and it was just like my childhood.
Oh yeah. Just constantly worried at some point we're going to flip channels to something else, right? Like, please stay here.
Dude, that's so awesome. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thank you.
You guys really, really nailed like what a 90s talk show looked and felt like, and in who the host was. Like, I would be a person who walks up to your table at Blobfest and says, like, oh, I've seen that show. Like, it feels very real.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I was going to say, like, and also, too, figuring out what we wanted to lampoon with this one was, like, in the original WNUF, it's, like, clear, like, and this is one reason why people might not like the new one as much from a standpoint of, I don't know if the new one's necessarily a horror film, you know? Like, it just feels, like, almost like a weirdo comedy, but with, like, you know, there's, like, horror and sci-fi and just exploitation elements. But, like, I was going to say, like, with the original, it's, like, we were figuring out, oh, we can do this, right? And like, oh, we'll make it a haunted house movie. Like, that'll be like sort of like what's the classic Halloween story, a haunted house. And then like with the sequel, I was like, okay, what kind of media like really feels 90s to us? And the commercials were the starting point. But then I was like, dude, when I was a kid, I watched a fuck ton of like Jerry Springer and Ricky Lake.
Oh, yeah.
And then the rest of the stuff I watched was stuff like Unsolved Mysteries and Sightings and things like that. So really like leaning into those two things as my most beloved, I guess, forgotten mediums. Like those don't translate these days, don't have that as much. Maybe the latter half, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's definitely making a comeback. I mean, who knows? Maybe we'll have a Sightings reboot on Hulu.
Man, fingers crossed, dude. I don't know if we're that lucky, though.
I'm completely unfamiliar with that show. We only really heard about it after seeing this movie. So we're definitely going to start digging it up. We're deep obsessed with UFO stuff right now.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely love it, then. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. You also do a really great job of... I don't know, like the WNUF feels like, oh, this is the 80s in a nutshell, but Out There, it sort of highlights the idea that like, oh, the 90s kind of had two different phases. Like we had the beginning of the 90s and the end of the 90s, yeah. And they were completely different.
Thank you so much for saying that. Yeah, like I feel like that's one of the things that like it was important to represent those two eras because there is sort of like this, like it becomes slightly more, I don't say like modern because it's what 20 some years ago, but it's like there is a shift of like I do think with WNUF it like the early 80s and late 80s were much different, but we were going with 87, so like that was always the sweet spot, where in this one it really is the biggest component for me is the corporatization of like local channels, right? So like you have Ace, essentially this big conglomerate, buying WNUF, the small mom and pop station, and I think that really changed it. Becomes like a Fox, right? Like it becomes like something where it's like, oh shit, they're not like, they're doing shows like, you know, Cops and Alien Autopsy, and they're not doing stuff as much as like, you know, you might not even have your local advertisers as much as you would. So
did you have a question you wanted to ask? I'm kind of like snowballing through this.
We'll talk all night.
Do you have a favorite local business ad? That's a two-part question. Do you have a favorite local business ad from real life? And then also, do you have a favorite from the movie?
All right, you think too.
Because
I can tell you my favorite persona from Baltimore would be, there's a guy called Bill's Carpet Fair.
Okay.
And I mean, Baltimore had some weird commercials. So Bill's Carpet Fair like started like sort of like Phil's Carpet Warehouse. That was clearly like Sean Jones, and the guy who made the original one, and who is Phil. He was clearly influenced by that, right? So Bill's Carpet Fair was like these really zany carpet ads, but like as time progressed, they started getting weirder and weirder because they're like, oh, what the hell can we get away with? Like Bill starts being in drag, like he starts playing like the other guy's mom, like it's all these weird things. And like, but they're hilarious. And then I was going to say, I mean, I love shitty political ads, especially when they're really small races with no money. It's just like amazing. Like trust me with government when I can't even get a good fucking like station. And then from the movie, I would say my favorite local one in there, I guess, like Grasso's Pizza. I love when regional ads bring in horror elements.
Yeah. I know. I'm trying to think. I don't really have.
I feel like growing up in Carroll County, though, I feel like you probably have some insane local commercials.
I know. And it's funny because, like, of course, I can't think of any right now. Like, all I think about, like, about growing. So Carroll County is like in central Maryland and it's kind of like farmland, you know, but we had like a great public access station where like these guys dressed as the Blues Brothers like hosted karaoke.
No way.
That was amazing weekend watching.
We were there for a wedding. Oh my god, I didn't even want to go to the wedding. I did. Rachel and Billy, I love you guys. I was watching the Carroll County public I was watching the Carroll County public access station, which by the way, I love watching local television. Whenever we travel, it's like the fucking best. But they had a show called like Paranormal Research Party or some shit. And I was like, what is this? Melissa, we can't go.
It's so funny. Commercials in Canada aren't great anymore. It's all just corporate stuff. Like it's just Coca-Cola and perfume. So whenever we're in the States, we always love watching hotel TV because like we don't get medication commercials. We don't get lawyer commercials. And that's all the commercials are in the States.
we're very over medicated.
Class action lawsuits and ED.
Every hotel we went to, we should have played a drinking game with like how long it would take to see the first Camp Lejeune commercial.
Oh my God. Time, yeah. Like, the lawsuit. No, the one thing I'll say is recently, man, we're just like, I feel like we're going to barely talk about the movie. We'll just talk about weird, kitschy bullshit, which is fine. I'm here for that.
Yeah.
But I was going to say years ago, Melissa hosted this, this show on our, oh my God, what PBS? What was that?
Maryland Public Television.
Yeah, their public television channel. And, so we had to get, in order to watch it, we had to get like a receiver. So I started falling in love with watching like local ads again, cause I couldn't watch them at our house cause we mostly just use Netflix and Hulu and stuff. And, there was this one ad that would always come back. It was for catheters. I was like the one guy's like an airplane pilot. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense. He probably needs a catheter. Yeah. And then it just goes down a road where you're like, oh my fucking God, there's a whole fucking ad for catheters. And it was like, and it's cause like ad space on these channels now is so cheap. It was like a minute fucking ad.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's great. The only like crazy one I can remember that's local to us. I don't know if you can remember the pawn shop guy.
Oh, I was going to bring this up.
Yeah. So yeah. It was, he's probably still doing these ads and he's probably like a 90-year-old. So when we were kids, he was doing them and it was every commercial break. It was a different ad.
I'm going to find this because if you don't know about this guy, like you're going to be amazed when you see some of his stuff because it feels like half the ads in your movie.
Yeah. It's like, oh, do you know what the jingle is? It's like something, something doesn't cost an arm and a leg. And he literally has an arm and a leg.
Oh my God.
Well, yeah. And he went from owning punch. He had pawn shops and then he got into some trouble because he was buying stolen jewelry. So like there were lawsuits involved and his name was disgraced. And then he like slowly climbed back up.
Through the commercials.
Yeah. And then, you know, once money order or like cash advance stores started becoming more popular, yeah. He started doing that too. And he became the Lone Ranger.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. Right. I was thinking about it in the theater when we watched it. I was thinking about it today too. It's just like, wow, this is pretty much the same ad. Like you have the Lone Ranger.
Well, it's really funny you bring that up because like when I do like a couple times when we were writing the movie, I would be like, oh, that feels like a funny thing I should lampoon. And I would do it two ways. I would be like, I'm sure I actually probably did Google Lone Ranger to see if someone had done it, but it probably resulted in like 12. And I was like, well, fuck it. I'll just do it then. Because there were a couple times where I was like writing like the there's like an ad for like a Baywatch ripoff show, and I remember like coming up with like some of the early titles, and some of the fake titles that I came up with were already shows that I just had never seen, and I was like, what the fuck? Like, all right, so I had to like go to my third or fourth title option when we did Coast Patrol. But yeah, that's the thing that's weird about it. Yeah, I mean, like that's the thing that's weird too, being regional. Like, you know, I mean, first of all, how many fucking Halloween ads say things like scary savings or like things like that?
Yeah, they're all the same.
But no, it was just so funny, like, realizing how many things are a lot more, repeatable in a world that most people would never see, right? Like, I would never know what was up where you guys are. Fuck, I wouldn't know what was in, you know, I don't know, Denver, Colorado, if it localized, I don't know.
One of my favorite things, and I think this is in both WNUF and Out There, is the cop segment of the news show where he's talking about like the dangers of Halloween. Something about that just makes it really feel like found footage. Like you're really seeing an actual cop scaring the shit out of kids before they go trick-or-treating.
Well, it's really funny. The guy who plays Officer Bookwalter, and Bookwalter is a reference to J.R. Bookwalter, who did a bunch of like pioneering SOV stuff. And he actually let us license some clips in the original movie. But like, so Fred Cowie, who plays Officer Bookwalter, he shows up and we shot that scene. This one literally.
That was one of the first things that we shot when we felt like, okay, we can shoot something outside, during the pandemic. So we basically, that tree is not even there anymore. They just cut down the tree.
Wow.
It's so sad. But we basically like went out, set up all the gear. I stood in for Fred, despite being probably like, you know,
a foot shorter
than him. Got it all set up, put wardrobe for him on our porch. He came up in his car, took the wardrobe, got dressed in his car, went over to the tree, stood there. We stood 6 feet away. You know, it was like, so just like bizarre, all of the things that we had to think about in like, you know, being responsible about making a movie.
Not knowing
like what, you know, how things were going to develop or like what all of the different risks were. So
yeah,
we just like played it really safe, which I'm glad for, even though it resulted in this movie taking like five years.
Yeah, it took a long time. But I was going to say, like, the other funny thing about Fred was he shows up and he has like a little like soul patch or something. And he was clean shaven in the first movie. And I was like, oh, I think you should shave the soul patch like beforehand. And like, he's like, no, 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 man. My character is, he's older now. He's a little more grizzled. He's being some shit. And I'm like,
trying to get back to the dating scene, maybe.
Yeah, the soul patch, like, the facial hair of all grizzled people.
He's divorced in between the first movie and this one.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing too about doing the 90s versus the 80s. When I did the 80s, I could look at all my fucking hipster friends and like mustaches and beards. I'd be like, perfect, you guys are good. The 80s have that.
Yeah.
No one wanted to be clean shaven in the 90s. And I was like, dude, like really, it really was a more clean shaven era for men. And like, it was such a hard time to convince, like, my buddy John, who plays Dr. Pizza and the moon face in the sleeping ad. He was so upset that I asked him to shave.
He's like, my wife's not going to like this.
I mean, I wouldn't be nuts about it either, but you know, if it's gonna make for a funny ad, I'd
you
do
did it,
it
for a Halloween costume.
I did do it for a Halloween. It was a good Halloween costume.
I don't even remember what it was.
I was dead.
Well,
James
this
Dean.
Mustache. Oh, nice. This mustache that Chris is sporting resulted from last year's Halloween costume because he was Magnum PI.
Yeah.
Oh no, shit! You grew the mustache for the costume?
Well, I have a beard usually, and I was like. Okay. And I was like, and I didn't have a Halloween costume. So I was just like, oh, fuck, I love tiki stuff. I got this Hawaiian shirt. I'll just shave
it. The Hawaiian shirt that you had was like my brother and sister-in-law gave it to you for Christmas. And it is a reproduction of the Magnum PI.
So
you had that shirt.
But now all my Halloween costumes have to involve a mustache because I don't want to get rid of it. So I was Edgar Allan Poe this year.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Perfect.
I think I've honestly, unfortunately, I think I've exhausted every bearded Halloween costume at this point. So now I'm just like, fuck it. I'm this thing with a beard.
My absolute
beard.
I love it.
My absolute favorite costume we've ever done, bearded wise, was Handsome John Pruitt and Thor from Adventures in Babysitting.
Oh, that's great.
Nice.
It actually worked out pretty good because I also didn't have to do anything to it. I was like, oh, as long as I just look, I don't know, disheveled, and I wear a jumpsuit, I'm good.
And that jumpsuit has come in handy. You've been Michael Myers like 16 times since then.
I'm honestly totally not surprised to hear that you guys are into tiki stuff, from having met you and hanging out with you a little bit. But also, was that PBS show that you had, Melissa? Was that the Spooktale cocktail show that
Shock
you were?
Tale.
Shocktale, my mistake.
No, so the MPT show that I did, it was actually very cool. It was all short films kind of around water conservation around the world.
Oh, wow.
So completely unrelated to horror or anything we do. Like, I just like went and auditioned for it and got this host gig for it. It was very cool. They were hoping it would be picked up. It was called Storylines.
Mm-hmm.
They were hoping it would be picked up as an ongoing program, but unfortunately they just did that pilot and that was it. But it was so cool because it was like something that was unrelated to everything else that I had been doing. I mean, I've done a few like commercials and instructional videos for Home Depot, funny enough, that people still to this day will message me and be like, hey, did you do some like Home Depot videos? I just learned to lay tile from you.
But I will say like the shock dollar stuff was kind of cool for the movie because like Alan, let's talk about the her being a horror host, but like we have her set in the basement. And like when we were doing the ad for the vampire toothpaste ad and also the Frankenstein makes a light beer ad, we just used her Shocktail Hour set. Like we didn't have
That's
to
great.
Build a set, we just had to move stuff around.
Yeah.
But no, how long did you do Shocktail Hour?
5 years.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So I started that in summer 2017 or spring 2017. Yeah, and I started that as a live show at a restaurant. Yeah, basically just like we have a friend who owns this restaurant, Golden West Cafe in Baltimore. And I just kind of mentioned like, man, I've always been interested in doing a horror hosting thing. And she just said, okay, why don't you do it here? And so we developed this show, developed this character. It was a monthly show to begin with. And then when the pandemic hit, like I actually had a show scheduled for March, whatever it was, and things were getting, you know, really dicey. made the decision that day to do it live stream, which I had never done before. And I was like, well, fuck, I guess we'll figure out how to do a live stream show from our basement. And we definitely hit some snags, but I think that was part of the charm of it as we went on, that we would like have technical difficulties, but just roll with it. And like, we were having a good time. So other people were having a good time and started getting an audience from all over. And I then started doing Aurora's bedtime stories during the pandemic, where every Sunday I would get into Aurora drag and spend like an hour reading stories, reading poems. I did one that was like specifically for families so people's kids could tune in and watch. Cute.
That's great.
Yeah.
It really like turned into this thing where like, and this doesn't relate to the movie, but it's interesting to me. I was going to say like, we ended up getting an audience that was way bigger than just like the Baltimore folks. Mm-hmm. And then, so we, because of that, I mean, we decided to do like more virtual shows where we like caught up other filmmakers that had shorts or features that we could trim down and show. And then it turned into DVDs. And
I came out with my first DVD this past summer because I had been invited to host Blobfest in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania, filmed the original Blob movie. So I had been participating in that show for a while. I did a virtual variety show the year before when they were doing everything virtually. And then they invited me to host the stage show. And I thought, well, damn, I should have something. I've been talking about doing a DVD. This is the perfect like fire under me, you know, to actually get this done. And it was a fast production.
Yeah, we made it happen. I mean, it's crazy. It's like a basically a horror variety show, like almost like something like if you remember like Groovy Ghoulies, but like live action.
Yeah.
And it's really fun. Like lots of weird things we do with like old, like all these horror hosts always show the same public domain movies. And that really didn't like speak to us. So we sort of reimagined.
Yeah, like made like different, like we play around with old movies, like making shorter versions or redubbing them and doing things like that. So, and then I make a cocktail to go along with the themes. And it's a lot of fun. And it's been really interesting just to see how that character has grown. And even going to like Midsummer Scream in California and not even being in Aurora drag, and like within 10 minutes of walking around the floor, like before people were set up, this guy was like, "You do Shocktail Hour, right?" And I was like, whoa.
That's very cool.
It's amazing.
That's a moment.
It was wild.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I just wanted to compliment, I think it's in the werewolf one that you did. We watched the dubbing segment.
Oh, God.
Killed us.
Like doubled over.
I have to give a shout out to you.
So
that's
funny.
Our buddy Rob Walker wrote the dubbing scripts. And so Rob wrote a bunch for like Hard Times, if you guys are familiar with them. He's a great friend. He's a WNUF fan. We became friends that way.
Yeah.
And
I think we were a little fatigued from writing because like I had written all the scripts like for Shocktail, like all the stuff with Aurora and all of her like interactions with the characters. And like Chris did a lot of really good like punch up and notes on it. And then I was like, oh my God, how am I even going to write this dubbing thing? And they're like, wait, Rob's really funny. Give it to him. Send it to the expert. So we're really lucky to have him because it is so funny.
Oh, yeah. So funny.
Yeah, hilarious. Our dogs, though, for some reason, do not like Party Werewolf. freaked out when he was on screen. I think specifically, like, asking for paws.
They were just not
fuck this!
They were like, disembodied paw ask!
Dude, that's so funny. I was going to say, like, so...
the content warning for dogs.
Not too big. Oh my God. But I was going to say like when I, okay, so I hate being Party Werewolf because it's putting crepe hair on my face. But I do it for my wife, who I love very much.
Sit still for so long while I put the makeup on you.
That's true. I don't like sitting still. Yeah. So when we came upstairs, like I'm trying to remember to see like Madame Leota, our cat, like even just like interacting with her while this does not look like her pet like, dad.
Yeah.
That's too funny.
He's definitely like had to smell me for a while and be like, I don't know. I don't trust this kid.
You're selling canine right now.
Yeah. The enemy. Yeah. I love that you guys are just like bursting with great ideas, but Melissa, aww, like as the co-producer of Out There, like, is it hard trying to rein him in every once in a while? Because I can imagine, it's probably not hard to imagine that his imagination could just run wild.
Oh yeah, like even coming out of, you know, like the movie tour and stuff, like, you know, I'm very much like, oh my God, I can't wait to like cook dinners at home and like get our life back in order. And Chris is like, which of these five things should I do next? Like, I've got this. And it's like, whew, okay, buckle up, here we go. But it's also, I mean, it's really amazing because there are so many times where I've said something like, oh man, you know what I'd really love to do? I'd love to like make a like folk record. And Chris will just be like, oh yeah, let's do it. And so we did a project called The Vanishing Hitchhikers, which is like a folk record about like urban legends. Or even Bucket of Blood, the movie Bucket of Blood, I was like, man, this would work really well as a stage play. And Chris is like, okay, do it. And so he like, for Christmas one year, gave me, he had a transcription service transcribe like the entire movie. And it was like, okay, now you have to do this. So I like directed this like immersive production of Bucket of Blood. So it's like that enthusiasm is so encouraging because there are a lot of times where I'm just like, whew, I'm so busy. I've got so much going on. This is an idea, but it'll remain an idea. And like one of the things that I love about being with Chris is that he'll like light that little fire, like almost like challenge me and be like, okay, so do it. Like,
yeah,
put your energy where your mouth is.
I mean, it is sort of like weird. Like I'll literally say like, oh man, it'd be fun to write like a novelty Halloween record. And I was like, if I wrote like songs for Aurora, would you just like, she's like, yeah, sure, whatever. Like, oh, yeah.
But it's, sing a bunch of dumb, weird, funny songs about Halloween.
But I was going to say, no, I think the most important thing with our relationship is I'm a psychopath. And like, I'm really impatient. Like I can be really difficult to work with because
people can't see me nodding.
Yeah. I was gonna say earlier about that. No, and I think Melissa is a really great producer. One, she's insanely organized. I am not organized. Like, I'm like chaotic organized. Like, I can tell you, like, oh, I know I have a clip of that that'll work for this thing. But like, my I don't know. I think my attention to detail functions a different way than her attention to detail does. So we have a good yin and yang there with but I was gonna say, like, no, I'm just like, I'm a terror. Like, and like she's the patient organized one. So yeah.
It is like the hardest part is probably like when we're really closely collaborating on something where we're playing sort of the same role, you know, for example, like co-writing something. It's just like, but I mean, it's like with anything that you do with your partner, you just have to like remind yourself that you respect this person and that just because you have different ideas, it doesn't mean that one is right and one is wrong. Because I think, you know, we can get a little precious about our ideas and about our work. And then when somebody comes in and is like, oh, it should be this way, it can be a little like, okay, we're going to take a deep breath and like try to see like, yes, it could be this way, but also like, well, I really wanted it to be this way.
You know? Well, I was going to say too, I think it's also important too, to figure out like, and I hope you agree with this. If you don't, this will be a fun moment. I think it's sort of like when you're working with with any two creative people, but especially like, I think creatively with your partner, it's like, okay, who's the driver's seat right now? Mm-hmm. Like with Shocktail Hour, Melissa's the boss. With WNUF, I was the boss, I'd say, you know? So like, it's one of those things where it's like, and I don't mean like boss like in this sort of weird way. It's more just like whose final decision.
Right.
Yeah.
Because like with Shocktail Hour, you know, I'll write stuff and like I'll send things to Chris for notes because I very much value like what he brings that I don't bring. Mostly like a lot of puns. Or, you know, like with Out There, like I gave notes on the script as well. Yeah. But knowing that like this was Chris's script, you know, I'm not like, co-writing this script. Yeah. I'm giving notes. I'm offering ideas for where I think, as particularly with Ivy, which I think like you were really open to my input on Ivy and like really helped, like you were very supportive of me making that character my own.
Yeah.
But it's like at the end of the day, it's like if I make a suggestion and Chris is like, no, I like it the way it is. It's like, like no questions asked. And like the same thing with Shocktail Hour stuff. You know, it's like you need to know like where those like boundaries are, which is harder when you're like, okay, we're co-writing a thing.
That's fair.
Yeah,
that's great. I was actually gonna ask if it's like you divide tasks based on your skills, but it looks like you kind of take turns in a way, which is really cool.
Yeah, I think it's like based off the avenue of like what the product is. Mm-hmm. I mean, but also that we have, we, you know, we play in a surf band together. Yeah. Melissa sings and I play drums in this band called Beach Creeper. And like, I mean, I wrote all the lyrics coming into it. Then when you joined the band, like you, we sort of like, now that's your thing. And, yeah. And it was mostly because it was like things like that were like, oh, that it just makes sense as a national.
Yeah. Solution. Yeah. And plus like, you know, and also just like writing melody, vocal parts like that, because like, you know, Chris would write these like really fun like vocal parts
for men.
But they're clearly so like when I came in to the band, well, and I guess I didn't really like join the band. It's just like I came back from a very long trip and he and a friend who was in the band had been like already working on some stuff. It was really important to me too to write for the band, because I was like, I don't want to just be like the singer who's just like, hey, here I am. Yeah. Like I'm the girl in the band, yeah. You know? So it was really important to me. And I feel good about like the way that that's transitioned too, because now that I'm really like more or less the lyricist for the band, you'll give like suggestions, but it's also cool if I'm like, nah.
I was gonna say, I also think it's like kind of important to figure out like, and checking your ego and sort of saying, okay, what's the skill set here? Like Melissa can write better melodies than me. Melissa is a better, much better actor than me. And I was gonna say like at the same time too, when we were doing like Shock Teller stuff, I think there was like understanding editing or production stuff. She would divert those questions to my skill set.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
That's cool. And it sounds like you guys are doing like everything. Like you guys have the variety show, you have a band, you make movies and with really insane and real looking commercials. Is that stuff that you're always doing simultaneously? Like, are you always creating commercials and stuff for the next project, or is it written specifically for the film?
Yeah. So right now, I mean, the joke Melissa made earlier about me, like what five things do we want to do next? I mean, that's not a joke. Like I literally have, a TV show that we're literally, me and my buddy Ted, we're like budgeting and pitching to someone. We pitched it earlier this week. That is pretty generally related to Out There, actually. And so hopefully that happens. But then also I have a couple feature films that I'm trying to figure out what next feature film I want to be. I mean, literally before this call, I was downloading some stock footage to try to see like, oh, like the starting point for something. And it would be sort of, it's basically essentially, well, let me not hint too much. It'll be a Christmas movie and like Christmas horror. And, but at the same time too, it was like, I don't want to blab the plot yet. Cause it's going to take me 3 or 4 years. Cause it's going to be another movie like we do. Cause that's the other thing too. It's like, even though we're busy, like we have full-time jobs that are not just this, right? Yeah, and that's the most important thing I try to explain to a lot of folks that are creatives. Like a lot of folks in, you know, even like when I used to teach screenwriting, like my students would be like, oh, I just want to go be a director. And I'm like, dude, you're going to be a gaffer for probably 15 years, like in like some cases, or it's not easy to turn a life of making art into a life where that pays your bills, right? So, but I mean, I will say this, you're writing a video game right now. You know? Like there's like, she does maybe do this for a living, I should say. Yeah, I don't, I'm a frozen. Yeah.
But to also answer the other part of that question, it's like, we're always working on projects, but not necessarily like banking commercials that might work for this or that. So yeah, like what you were saying is more the latter, where it's like, once we have the idea of what we're starting to work on, then we'll start making the components of it. Like for example, the commercials that are in Shock Tale Hour, you know, like we figured out that stuff we wanted to do. And then Chris would do a lot of like editing of stock footage and like produce all of those commercials.
I mean, I will say that like one of the things that I love doing about with the WNF movies and or things like that is I fucking love stock footage. Like I sincerely, like I find it so inspirational. I feel like it's my muse. Like I love looking at a clip and it really is sort of like that moment in like Ed Wood when Johnny Depp is seeing the footage of like the octopus and the fucking buffalo running. Yeah. Like my brain works like that. Like how could I make that into a story? So yeah, I mean, like, and I think I made this joke at the screening we were at, but like there was one of the commercials in Out There. It was a guy, it's a shot of a guy playing cello in a field of poppies. And like, I was like, what the fuck? How is that even stock footage? Why would you ever use that? And my brain went, oh, that should be like a B-roll for like a Pure Moods type commercial. So we made Essential Vibes, like the fake CD of the Month Club. Because I was like, who the fuck would use a footage of that guy just playing cello.
Oh man, I loved that commercial too, because it reminded me of like, you know, when your mom would make you go to like Hallmark and all that they had for you to do was to click those like different CDs.
Yes! That rounder that would be in the store. Yeah, yes. You click for all the samples of like
Easy
every
Jazz. Yes.
Oh my God.
Wow, you just took me back.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. That's funny.
Honestly, I got like a million other questions I want to ask you guys, just because I love what you do, and I love how much of it's also just like in your own control, like you handle your own distribution and everything. But I don't want to keep you all night. Like we can.
We don't care.
It's up to you guys. Like seriously, if you want to
keep. Two-parter.
Yeah. But you tell us. No, we'll answer questions till you guys are exhausted. Yeah.
What's it like handling your own distribution?
So I didn't until this one.
Yeah.
And okay, so I'll tee it up this way. So I work with a lot of different distributors. I think some are better than others, right? But ultimately, it was never really that profitable from a standpoint of just like, even somebody selling a lot of units, there's a lot of people that start cutting out into that profit. So one of the things that was really interesting about self-distributing this one, and I will say this, I don't know necessarily if I would recommend self-distribution to everyone, but we had this, if somebody has a good social media presence or has a product that people really want to see, then I would recommend it because you don't need a lot of the middleman. And like at this point, like as long as people feel comfortable buying directly from you, or you want to start a platform, like get it through Amazon or something, although Amazon's cut is probably insane. I was really happy with how this time turned out. And the other thing that was cool too, was we were directly connecting with fans. Mm-hmm. So you have a situation where like one, if you buy directly from us, you're getting a package from Trader Tony's Tape Dungeons. It's already kind of an immersive experience.
Yes.
Which like I remember when we sent the crowdsource backers their copies, you know, we started getting like people messaging me like, dude, I was creeped out when I got a fucking package from Trader Tony's Tape Dungeons. But to bring it back to advice for filmmakers, I mean, like, no one's going to care about promoting your movie like you're going to care. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I licensed so many titles when I was younger to people who just like, you know, it was their release for April. And then come May or June, no one gives a fuck. What was frustrating about that was they're taking 50% or whatever the split would be. And then they would expect you, will you promote it? And I'm like, if you're the promotions arm, like if you're like I want to promote it, but like if all you're doing is selling copies to my friends and family, well, then I can sell copies to my friends and family,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah,
so I think it really comes down to your audience and how big that footprint is.
And it's really stressful and it's very time consuming.
It
is. Particularly like fulfilling orders. And, you know, one advantage that we have is that I do freelance, like I do contract work. So like I can make my own schedule. And so we decided that like when we were going to be like number one, traveling a lot for the movie, and number two, like probably in the bulk of like that fulfillment period, that I would like take fewer freelance gigs so that I could really be what we call the operations manager.
Yeah.
You know? Because like sometimes, like I said, it was packing like, you know, 50 orders a day, particularly when we were coming back from trips. But at the very beginning, I mean, we'd get like 200 orders like in those first few days, like in a day. And it's just like, oh my God, holy shit.
Yeah,
like,
that's all day.
And then I'm hand packing all of those, you know, and like if people order multiple DVDs or order a bundle, I'm like rolling it in paper and putting a cute little piece of tape with like jack-o'-lanterns on it, you know? But the other thing that's really cool about it is that we would get messages, you know, where people would just like put in the notes like, oh, this is for my partner's birthday. They love WNUF. I can't wait for this. And it gives you the opportunity to then like give them a present too. Slip in an extra DVD and just be like, you know, enjoy and all this. Like, or just like if people had problems. Luckily, I mean, I'm knocking on wood because like it's been like 99% great as far as like everyone getting like their orders, everything working. But we had one person who's like,
that's great.
The VHS like tape arrived like smashed. Oh, I don't know what.
I was thinking of a different story.
Oh my God. We had this crazy person who somehow got in their head that they like were going to get a streaming code and they were mad that they had to, and it says that nowhere. Like we don't have plans to stream the movie for like probably a very long time, but they were so pissed that they had to go buy a DVD player to play the DVD
that they bought.
And they send us this email in which they are, no joke, threatening violence against us.
Wow.
So we came up with like a gently snarky reply, which was like really fun.
Yeah,
I think
was it BetterHelp that we sent them?
Chris, I was like, I kind of just want to send this dude a BetterHelp link and be like, you know, this therapy could probably be really helpful to you. And Chris was like, fuck it, do it.
Yeah.
So we wrote this email And then the, he did not like that.
He didn't, it went back
of course not.
He wrote us three times, and I was like, man, if this guy writes to me again, I'm just going to be like, I'm so sorry. We don't have time for a pen pal right now.
Yeah.
Just like, pretty much.
But I will say this. I'm really glad we got a P.O. box after that one.
Yeah. It's a good idea.
I was like, if we're going to do this, we are getting a P.O. box. And like, is it okay for me to say what you used to do?
Oh my God, yeah.
So Chris is like, oh, well, like when I used to not want people to know my address, I would just use my parents' address.
Oh no.
And I was like, well, what do you think the consequences?
My parents will just end up murdered by some such.
You did mention that you're a psychopath earlier, so it's totally fine. Yeah. It fits.
Yeah. So I was like, you're kind of making an argument for the P.O.
box.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was adamant about the P.O. box.
The funny thing is, once you start, like, we had this period where we got a version of a P.O. box years ago when we were, you know, shipping stuff out and we didn't want to have our home address
on
it.
We still have a P.O. box.
No, so we do that. Man, the Canadian postal system is completely different. That was an RPO box. And I was like, oh, great. No one knows where we live. And I was like, but this is also the closest post office to our house. So, like, if you're paranoid about people coming to your house, like, well, if they're crazy enough to come here, it's probably not hard to assume that they would go to hang out at my post office and then find me and then follow me home. It just, it doesn't end. Like, that. Those are the things that I think about when I lay down in bed. I'm like, I gotta go check all the locks in the house again.
I was just worried because it was an open P.O. box. Like, it was, like, open for, like, fans of the show to send us stuff. I was worried that we were gonna get something weird in
like
there.
Like, a severed hand
that was,
or
like,
something?
Or, like, a leaking package or just something strange.
Oh, God.
And then, like, having to look the post office lady in the eyes every time afterward.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say the first couple weeks when we were mailing out DVDs for the movie, like, the post office hated me.
Oh my God.
And I literally threw them a pizza party because I felt so bad.
That's
I
so smart.
I literally came in with like a stack of pizzas. Yeah.
That's great. And now they high five you every time you show up, I assume.
Yeah, they do.
Like, that's that guy. I mean, that kind of goes back to the 90s. Like, nothing won a bunch of kids over like a pizza party.
Oh yeah, man.
Now they just call me Dr. Pizza.
Oh, that's great. Well, we like to close out every interview. Did you have any other questions you wanted to ask?
I'll ask one after.
Oh, please. Okay, fine. All right. Well, we like to close out interviews by asking. We like to close out interviews by asking people what their dream double feature would be at the drive-in. If you could play any two movies, what would you play?
Are you going to go?
Go ahead.
Okay. My question is, well, actually, I shouldn't say question. I have two double features based off of what time of year it is.
Ooh.
So if this is summer at the drive-in, I got to go with slasher movies, and I would go Sleepy, Sleepies.
Yeah.
I would go, that's great, leave that in. I would go Sleepaway Camp 2, then second feature, Return to Horror High.
Okay.
So that would be my summer one. And then if I was doing like Halloween weekend, now granted, these did not play theaters, I think, but that's okay by your rules. Right?
Yeah.
You play anything.
No, this is your drive-in.
All right, I would hell yeah, my drive-in. I would do Halloween weekend. I do a double feature of Midnight Hour, so the '80s like made-for-TV thriller ripoff. That'd be my first feature, and then my second feature would be Bill Hinesman's Flesh Eater, really regional Pittsburgh zombie movie. It's terrible. But
okay.
Like that, those movies encapsulate like drive-in Halloween to me.
Right. Yeah. Like, I'm never looking for solid quality when I go to see a bunch of old horror movies at the drive-in.
I would open mine with Farting Preacher.
Yeah.
No, I would do The Undertaker and His Pals, and which I, because it's bonkers.
That's good.
And then I would do Grave Robbers, which then I was like thinking, I was like, man, they both have like crazy motorcycle.
I didn't think about that.
Right?
Yeah.
So
that's
it's like
a good double feature.
Link up there.
Yeah.
You got a theme.
Yeah. So Grave Robbers, the one that's like the waitress who falls in love with the, or I don't know if she falls in love with him. She gets proposed to you by the funeral director.
Because
there's also another movie that came out a year later that's Mexican called Grave
Robbers. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Grave Robbers, the one that we were, did Severin put that out? Or was that year, I think?
I don't
know. Severin or Bigger
put that out.
Yeah.
Got it. But man, it's wild.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's so fun.
And Undertaker Pals, I mean, you showed that at Shocktail Hour.
I did. That was one of the first movies I showed at Shocktail Hour.
Yeah,
Undertaker
great.
Pals.
Great.
Oh, well,
yeah, so I think it would be like a really fun, wild night at the drive-in.
Okay, and real last question. Where can people get out there?
Yes. So WNUF.bigcartel.com. That's where you can get it. WNUF.bigcartel.com. And you're buying it directly from us. Yeah. So if you're listening and you're like, oh, man, these guys seem like so much fun. Wait till you see our movies.
Yeah. I couldn't get a package that was lovingly packed and kissed gently before it sent off to the world.
If you want that, right? Please kiss the package. Yeah. Just joking. I don't know if you're able to do that.
Thank you again to Chris and Melissa for taking the time to talk to us today about Out There, the Halloween Megatape. Quick reminder, you can get your own copy of Out There at WNUF.bigcartel.com. It's the only place that you can get this movie right now because they distribute it themselves, and it is an absolute must-watch before putting together your best of 2022 list.
And definitely something that, you know, if you've moved away from physical media, if you were to, like, grab something again physically, this is one to grab.
Oh, yeah. This movie should only exist physically.
Yeah,
it's
a reminiscent kind of thing. You have to actually physically put it on.
Yeah. Oh, that what a trip down memory lane that you have to put the tape in yourself, right? It's crazy that that's just a thing of the past.
It was weird the other day when we started watching like Christmas movies. Sorry to let you guys know that I watch Christmas movies. Just ignore it for a minute. And I didn't know which side of the TV stand the DVD player was in, and I didn't know which cupboard door to open, and I felt real shame.
Anyway, yeah, Christmas is upon us, and we will be back next week with a regularly scheduled episode of Nightmare on Film Street. We're moving into holiday territory, but I promise you, we are talking about horror movies that are surprisingly Christmas movies. Just like the lightest hint of Christmas, but still a fucking rad horror movie. One of my absolute favorites coming next week, a zany, balls to the walls, fucking 90s direct-to-video special. But until then, I'm John.
I'm Kim.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.